The BS Report is presented by Subway. Football season is over. Footlong season is just beginning. For a limited time, get any piled high regular footlong for just $5. Any footlong, just $5. Hurry in, Subway. Eat fresh. Eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, it's a dramatic conclusion of podcast week. We had a little stumble yesterday. It's tough to do a podcast week when you don't do five podcasts.
Yeah.
I didn't do one on Thursday.
What happened?
I was called into duty for the ESPN the magazine. That voice you hear is Adam Carolla. He's the last guest of podcast week.
Yeah.
Adam, we have a new sponsor, Subway.
I love me some Subway.
Yeah, who doesn't? So, I think this might be a record appearance in the BS Report. I think this is like
really?
Five. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're up there. We certainly minutes logged. Record.
You have the highest average per minute or average per podcast. So
yeah.
You had an emotional
I'm
day
winded.
Today.
I did.
You lost your show.
I did. The Adam Carolla show came to an end. The radio program
came to. Would you call it an end or a hiatus or it's moving into a different phase or?
Well, it will end its terrestrial radio run and begin living where you people hear us right now
right. In
the land of the computer, namely the podcast.
So welcome to your future.
AdamCarolla.com and starting Monday, hear my podcast.
It starts Monday.
Yeah, first guest. Me. There's going to be a lot of me.
What are your favorite guests?
I love me some me.
You're just going to talk for 45 minutes.
I will try to keep it to about that. And now, mind you, I have to do radio at 5:58 in the GD morning.
Right.
And I don't know if you guys have ever passed a comedy club, but none of them open until 8 p.m. And there's a reason for that.
Yep.
It's really hard to be funny when you're annoyed. And that's what you are. You know, like at 5, you get that call, even when you're taking a nap. You ever take a nap at like 3:30 in the afternoon, the phone rings, hi, it's your dad. Jesus Christ, Dad, what time is it? 3 in the afternoon? Well, do you think you'd have some consideration?
Yeah.
What are you napping? What's it sound like I'm doing over here? Like, you know, you just get angry in the morning. Like, I'll get up, go downstairs, go pour if you're out of anything, like, I'm ready to get divorced.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go down, like, where's the rice checks? Ah, oh, Jesus. I swear to you, I'm getting divorced as soon as I get home today. This rice checks thing, this is a slap in the face. This will not go unforgotten. Like you're just in the world's crappiest mood.
Yeah.
And so comedy, it's really a bitch to ring that cowbell and do the comedy at 6 a.m.
This will add years to your life. The fact that you don't have to get up that early.
Oh, I will be wearing a bathrobe. I'm going to do it at like 8 at night. I'll have a glass of red wine in my hand. I'll be petting a Persian cat. It's going
like
to be
Dr.
awesome.
Evil.
I'll be like Dr. I'll be in a high back leather chair.
I did your show once for the entire time. I think I replaced Damashek because he couldn't be there for sports. Got up at like 5:30, drove in.
Brutal.
I didn't wake up until like 8:30. I had no recollection of anything we talked about for two and a half hours.
And not only that, I know, it's really like someone roofied you and told you to do comedy. and there's a lot of this, too. Like, you know, you do a lot of, that's the funniest thing I've heard since, what is that show with the... I can't remember. Is it Emilio Estevez? Charlie Sheen. Either way. Anyway, let's do some traffic.
Right. You know, the other part is that, I mean, how many people do you have working for that show? Like 12? 15?
Yeah. Could have been, I mean, with interns and everything. Yeah, maybe 12.
I mean,
people.
To keep that station operating, it probably costs like $20 million a year.
For
all the shows, talent.
$18 million a year. Yeah.
You didn't have a coffee maker that was worth even 10 bucks. That was the part I never understood. It's like a $20 million studio, this morning show that thrives on being awake, and the coffee machine is like from Caldor's from 30 years ago.
And not only that, but one time we wanted peanut butter, and our program director, Jack Silver, announced that you guys would have to buy your own peanut butter.
Right.
Yeah.
What is that mentality with radio stations where they just skimp on the dumbest things? Paper.
It's a control thing. It's a way to keep everyone in check. There's a huge difference between radio and television. As I've said many times, TV is evil and smart, and radio is evil and dumb.
Right.
That's really the difference between TV and radio. And I would add cheap in that as well. When we did Loveline, Dr. Drew and I would work three jobs during the day and then come in at 10 o'clock to do Loveline. All we asked for is coffee, and K-Rock said, no can do. You're going to have to buy your own coffee. And I actually said, I'm quitting if you guys don't provide coffee for us. And I maybe even held out a day until they got coffee. But it's not really about being cheap as much as it's about who's boss now.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's essentially the I'll try to be delicate because I know how delicate the sensibilities of your sports fans can be, but it's a lot like what the rear end sex is like in a relationship.
Please be advised.
It's not that we like it. We just want you to know who's in control.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now who's boss?
Fortunately for you, this is a podcast for a mature audience. It's a free willing conversation, if you will.
Well, hell, you hear worse on 2.5 Men these days.
Yeah, it's probably true. You know, we were talking about radio executives, and I'm not saying this applies to every radio executive, just almost everyone I've ever met. But do you watch Lost?
I've seen it, but I don't follow it regularly.
They're all kind of like Locke's dad in Lost. Like, they're oily. They're wearing a bad jacket from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They give you the feeling like if you put your wallet down on the counter and you went to go to the bathroom, you'd come back, it would be gone.
And they're wearing like stonewashed denim.
Yeah.
They're all into hair bands, and they have great ideas like, two words for you, Ace Man. Wing ball. You're like, what's that? And by the way, everything's huge in Philly.
Yeah.
So you go, what? Wing ball? Yeah, we get morbidly obese guys. You see how many hot wings they can eat in 20 minutes.
Right.
And what's funny about that? It's huge in Philly. And by the way, I don't know what the program directors in Philly, I don't know what city they pick as their example. They probably pick Los Angeles. Like when they're in Philly pitching the wing bowl, when the semi-retarded program director's pitching the wing bowl to whoever Adam Carolla is in Philly, he must go, huge in L.A.
Right. Well, it's when you think about it, radio, cities are so provincial. You wouldn't know because you've never left the outskirts of Burbank, I don't think. You've
right.
Been in North Hollywood, Burbank.
I'll be fair. I got to Glendale one time.
Oh, you got to Glendale. I've actually lived in a couple different cities, and cities are just different. The people there are different. The things they value are different. It's hard to me to fathom how anybody could transcend all the different cities and be the morning show, which was why I was impressed. Like, you were big in Vegas. You were big in Seattle.
Well, I'll tell you.
Think of people in Vegas versus people in Seattle. How different can you get?
You're exactly right. And one of my happiest achievements was being number one in Seattle and number one in Vegas, who are, by the way, number one in their own way, because Seattle's the number one smartest city in the United States and Vegas is the number one dumbest city. And I say that openly because I know they don't know how to podcast over there. They just try to shove nickels into computers. So, and want to know why there's no payday. So I told this to the syndicators, by the way. I would say to Westwood One, look, forget about all the spiel and the Dancing with the Stars nonsense. Just tell them, doing great in the smartest city, doing better in the dumbest city in America. And surely your station and your city would fall somewhere between Vegas and Seattle.
Everyone in Vegas is like, hey, I'm friends with just waitresses and strippers.
So right.
He's probably right.
Right. Yeah. Mexico falls somewhere between Vegas and Seattle. Everything falls somewhere. They're the bookend.
It's a nice spectrum.
There's nothing that you can discuss or think about that doesn't land somewhere between Vegas and Seattle.
Yeah, and, you know, in Seattle, it's basically just raining. They lost their basketball team. Their sports have gone to hell.
Yeah.
They're just sitting there thinking about stuff. They're listening to Kurt Cobain and Soundgarden.
Right.
In Vegas, they're like, hey, what are we doing today? Whoa.
Hey, we're going down to Binion's. and it's lots of fun and get a 99-cent shrimp cocktail.
Well, here's my question for you.
It's got to be rough in Vegas with the economy being what it is. Like,
oh, it's depressing.
I got to, like, it's like, wow, man, you got to pay $3 for 40 pounds of beef now. I remember back when it used to be $1.99.
Right.
Like, in a way, it's depressing to be in Vegas during the Depression. But on the other hand, all the shrimp you can eat for $1.89's got to help the budget a little bit.
That's true. Yeah, pot roast. I can eat pot roast at some casino for $5.99 and
a
chip.
If I had, because, you know, our beloved Jimmy Kimmel comes from Vegas, and he would.
Although, does he?
Well, we can get into that nomenclature in a moment.
Has anybody ever claimed more hometowns? I'm from there.
I know.
From nine places.
He's really like a bad politician. It's great to be back in one of the aides whispers. Poughkeepsie. Poughkeepsie. I look at it as my second home.
I'll never forget that 3 months I spent here.
But his dad and he, and I guess, you know, they were locals in Vegas for a while. And when you're local in Vegas, you don't gamble, but you still go to Caesar's Palace and nosh out on the buffet for next to nothing. And as we all know, you know, the buffets are lost the leader. They make their money with the gamblers. They lose the money on the bottomless shrimp bucket. Yeah. I'm just saying, if I had myself a casino in Vegas, there would definitely be a no locals policy over there. And if I saw old man Kimmel come through the door in the Bermuda shorts more than once a week, I would escort his ass out, you know, casino style.
So it'd work like the Wynn topless pool where you have to show your room key.
That's right. I'm going to need to see some ID, right, and I'm going to need to know you're checked in here. Otherwise, I'm just losing a ton in mashed potatoes.
Vegas is interesting because it's the only city where you can actually see the effects of what's happening with the economy.
Yeah.
You go and it's like, yeah, there's that building. It's half done, and it will never be finished. It's just this 20-story building that was supposed to be 50 stories, and now it's just over. It's almost like the beginning of I Am Legend.
Yeah.
When Will Smith's driving around, and just society that used to exist.
My heart, I mean, I have no connection to Vegas. You know, gambling is probably up there with alcoholism and slamming heroin with as far as societal ills. But I love Danny Gans, and he's such a dear, 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 dear friend. And, you know,
Are you being serious right now?
No, all I know is okay. I'm trying to think of maybe Mark Anthony. I'm trying to think of names I've heard more and have seen less.
Danny Gans and...
I feel like between Danny Gans and the guy from the Rosewood restaurant holding the 70-pound lobster in the bad tuxedo from the 80s, who kind of looks like Peter North's chubby brother.
Right.
I've never eaten there. Like, I would one day like to compile of lists of names and things and advertisements I've seen, but never used, never touched, never spoken to.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been in a Red Lobster.
But I've passed a zillion Red Lobsters, heard a million Red Lobsters, never been to the Giant Lobster place, never seen Danny Gans' act, yet every time I drive through Vegas, nothing but billboards with Danny Gans. Crazy, super tan guy with jet black hair.
You know, it's when I watch Knocked Up, Seth Rogen and Paul Rudd, they go to Vegas and they go to Blue Man Group, they get stoned.
Yeah.
I always thought that's one of those weekends that would be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
If you just went with your buddies, but you'd never do it. But if you went with your buddies and you just crossed all these off. What's Danny Gans like? What's it like to see Blue Man Group? What's it like to see Siegfried and Roy?
Ah,
they're gone now.
Well, a couple things. First off, I saw Blue Man and they asked me to come backstage because they're fans of mine. And it's really weird when a dude who you've just been watching, you know, play the bongos on a bunch of ABS pipe for the last 2 hours. With the condom over the head, you can't see his ears. He's still wearing the blue grease makeup. He's like, "Hey man, how you doing? Big fan. Can I get a picture?" And I'm like, "You're Blue Man, dude." He's like, "Yeah, big fan. Can I get a picture of you?"
Sure thing,
like,
Blue Man number three.
Yeah, I don't know which blue you are. And also, it's just weird when guys who never talk, Teller.
I've hung out with
Teller many times where Teller's like, "Hey, what's up? You want to hang out with the guys from Blue Man?" It's like, stop talking, man. You're freaking me out.
Yeah, that is weird.
It really is. It's like your dog coming up to you just going, "Hey, what's up? What's going on?"
That was a hard thing for me to get over when I started working for Kimmel. was like doing bits with celebrities and stuff and just seeing them just try. Say normal things like, you know what I could use right now is a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, you're Jay Moore. Like, try. It's just weird that you're Jay. It was just weird.
He doesn't get those good of bookings, by the way. But yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yes, it was freaky for Blue Man to talk to me. And as far as your Siegfried and Roy thing goes, I must say to a lot of haters out there, I was smart because I was, excuse me, out there about 5-6 years ago. We were doing Crank Anchors from Vegas, and I said to David Alan Greer and whoever else, let's go see Siegfried and Roy. Ooh. And Kimmel made fun of me, and all the guys that looked down their nose at Top Quality Entertainment, they all had a big laugh at the Ace Man's expense. And I said, look, these guys aren't going to be around forever, and I don't care if they're campy. You want to say it. And everyone said, oh, get the F out of here. We're going to the cool nightclub. And I said, look, I bet people were talking this way in 1976. Yeah. I bet somebody said, hey, let's go see Elvis. And the other guy said, are you kidding?
Fat Elvis, you mean?
Yeah, let's go see Fat Elvis. Right. Let's go see, and the cool people said, are you kidding? Gordon Lightfoot's playing at the Mirage. He's where it's at. And they all laughed. They had a big hearty laugh at the guy who said, you know what? I'm going to go with the old folks in the squares and go check out Fat Elvis. And then Fat Elvis died the next day, and I'll bet you the guy who saw Elvis is damn happy he saw Elvis and can tell his grandkids he saw Elvis. I feel the same way about Siegfried and Roy. Well, I went and saw them.
The worst part of that story is that Kimmel gave you guff.
Yes.
This is a man who cooks, who goes on cooking websites.
Yes.
And really takes pride in what he cooks, and he just, to me, it's like, I'm not against that, but you can't like wear an apron twice a week and then make fun of the Siegfried and Roy thing. I think you've lost your privileges.
He passed his judgment on me. He looked down his nose upon me for going and seeing Siegfried and Roy. This is a man. By the way, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Gayer, apron with nothing on underneath, or chaps with nothing on underneath. I know both gay. I'm looking for gayer.
Chaps.
Is there something a little gayer about the apron with nothing on?
It's tough. I might have to like wear.
You
both
come
outfits.
Home. I'm going to wear. And both I'm in one of those outfits.
If you're in either, I'm turning around.
I have an apple martini. I'm waiting by the door. What do you want me in?
Hey, my dad orders apple martinis. Do I have to reevaluate everything? Hey, let's talk about for the last what it has been 3 years.
Yeah.
So you're going to work and you're talking for 20 hours a week. It's really your dream scenario. You have these other people in the room. They're trapped there.
Yeah.
And you just get to talk to them.
Yeah.
You're now conditioned now to talk to people for 4 hours a week plus all the other people you talk to.
It's more of a hostage situation than it is an actual radio show.
Well, now it's been removed.
Yeah.
Does your wife is she going to leave treadmarks? Like, who are you going to talk to?
I don't know. I'll do a podcast, so I'll get some of that off my chest.
More.
I'll definitely sleep more. It's scary how much I can sleep when I'm left to my own horrible devices. And the other thing that's funny is here's how you know your job is miserable. On a weekend or on an off day, I will oftentimes wake up at like 5:30 to, shake a little of the dew off the lilies. A lot of guys in their 40s have to do these days. And I will wake up. It'll be pitch black outside. It'll be freezing cold, though it'll be raining outside. I'll do that thing where nothing wakes me up except for my bladder. I have to get up. I'm not even going to turn the light on. I'll stumble into the bathroom and see if I can make it to the toilet. And I'll be thinking, Jesus, man, is it early? And I'll look over at the clock, and the clock will say 5:37, and I'll think to myself, oh, wait a minute. I would have been up an hour before this if it was a weekday.
Right.
Which is a horrible, horrible discovery.
And then you get bummed out.
It happens every weekend. I'll just get up on a Sunday and go like, oh, God, wait a minute. I'd be driving to work right now. So I don't have to deal with that anymore. And
that's great. I see you. I see me looking at you 3 months from now, running into you and being like, man, Adam looks great. He's doing great.
Getting up at the crack or whatever will ruin.
Yeah.
Will ruin your day. It will ruin your mood. I would come home and just start yelling at people about nothing. And as far as talking, That's going to be a tough one because, 20 hours a week of yapping. You know, we didn't play any songs.
Right.
And I would do live reads in between the spots. So in between the actual yammering, I would then do a live read for, like, Cerritos Toyota, and it was talking in between talking.
You might have to increase your cell phone minute plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the P scenario that you brought up, the 530P, which now I am a victim of sometimes
yes.
as well because we're both old.
Sure.
I have one other obstacle is the fact that I'm blind.
Uh-huh.
Like I can't see without my glasses. I cannot see, but I've learned how to fumble around like Mr. Magoo. I don't bump into stuff, but with the dark 5:30 in the morning pee thrown in with the fact that you can't see where the pee's going.
Yeah.
So then it enters that realm of, do I put my glasses on? But then I have to look for them. I might wake up as I'm looking for them.
Right.
So basically I just wing it.
Yeah.
I aim, and I just hope I hear water. One out of seven times I don't,
I don't
care.
The most disconcerting sound ever is hearing water and then not hearing water.
And then wondering,
for
oh.
a period of time, and then over-adjusting.
Right.
And hearing something else, like a Sports Illustrated magazine
or
it's potpourri
a
dish.
Right. Yeah. You know it's a seat when it's splattering against you.
Yeah.
And then it's like the splatter. Do I wipe it off or do I just get back in bed? Nah, I'm going back in bed. Screw it.
Yeah. It's really, and also I think you can, you can tell the age of a tree by counting its rings.
Yeah.
And you can probably tell the age of a male by counting the salvos after you've done with the initial urination. Cause when I was 11, I'd take a whiz. Cut it off, and it's right back to the room.
Yeah.
Now it's like, cut, oops, got one more parting shot, little shot, another burst. Kind of like tracers coming out
it's
of a
funny
World
you're talking
War
about
II.
This.
It's like, bloom, bloom. I start and stop like 28 times now. And I think I went from zero. When I was in my 20s, it was probably two or three times. Now I'm up to like six times. If you gave like 4.5 or 5 years for each after the initial whiz salvo, that's how old you are. Like, I could tape record
so
a guy.
It's like dog years.
Yeah, I could just tape record a guy taking a whiz and tell you exactly how old he was. He's a Pisces, by the way, born in March. I can tell that much just from the sound of his urination.
Whiz specialist. This sounds like a CSI spinoff, potentially.
That's right. All we have is audio from the bathroom, Chief. Well, there's only one man to call.
When I used to go to Celtic games when I was a kid, so they, you know, they have these bathrooms with the urinals just crammed next to each other. So not only are you peeing, but, you know, when you're like 9, you're right next to somebody's.
Oh.
You're like, you can't turn.
Dodger Stadium, by the way, and, you know, some of the older venues.
Oh, the trough?
A
Fenway had those.
Oh, yes.
The trough is
a Roman-esque trough.
Horrible. And like one of those places where if you drop your keys in there, you just, there go the keys. We're cabin at home.
Call a cab. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I'm not doing my urinal thing.
Sorry.
So I remember peeing and doing when you're 9, you just have the super prostate.
Mm-hmm.
You just pee and
Right.
And then, but then hearing the other guys, while I was waiting to pee, hear the old guys do the trickle, trickle.
Yeah.
Stream, trickle, trickle.
It's like when a car runs out of gas.
Right, and just laughing and being like, I'm going to kill these guys. Watch when I pee.
Yeah.
And now I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Now I'm the guy who has the trickle.
I know. The short burst from the machine gun is always the funny one. And it's somehow, it makes the urination thing at 5 a.m. with all the tile in the bathroom go from loud to deafening. It's like, bloop. Bloop, bloop, bloop. I don't know why no one has done the acoustic math on the bathroom itself, because there could be no worse acoustic room for what goes on.
That's interesting. So you're saying like when you build a home theater, maybe you want to like do that special wallpaper on
it or
something.
It's not much of a science. It's pretty straightforward. You put a sofa in a room, you hang curtains in a room, you put some wallpaper in a room, you put wall-to-wall carpeting in a room, and you have a nice solid acoustic base. This is a cast iron porcelain covered bathtub.
Yeah.
Which is just like a huge echo chamber.
Right.
A shower, which is covered in more tile. Huge thing. The toilet itself doesn't absorb any sound at all. It kicks it back out.
There's no rug on the floor. It's usually like tile.
Tile everywhere. Yeah. Semi-gloss oil-based paint everywhere. And then just porcelain everywhere else. And then steel and brass and ivory fixtures.
Right.
I mean, there's no worse place to cut a fart than in a bathroom. I swear to God, people flying over a house can hear it from their Southwest flight. I mean, you go into a room with a nice sectional sofa, gas away.
Right.
You go into the bathroom. My wife can be downstairs watching TV and hear the reverberation come from upstairs. One of the worst places in the world. And acoustically, if you think about it, we should have done a little better job on this. I don't know. Maybe
there's
make
still time.
Make the shower curtain out of like that thick foam stuff that looks like an egg crate.
Well, what's the special wallpaper you use? You put it in your little special TV room.
They have sound absorbing wallpaper. They have sound board you can put up. I mean, there's really many things you can do. This is why there's nothing better than a fart fan. You know, it's not the fact that it's sucking whatever came out of you out. It's called a fart fan. And I have bought fart fans in the past, and you know, you'll go into the Home Depot and you go into the section there, and it's the bathroom ventilation fan or whatever. It's the thing that's over the toilet. It's allegedly there to pull the steam out for the shower, but we know why it's really there.
Yeah.
It's like when you're a kid and you go to the Army surplus store and you'd see the weird vibrator thing behind the counter and there'd be a picture of a woman putting it on her shoulder. Listen, we know what this is for. Who are you kidding? So you buy the ones and the ones would be like whisper quiet, extra quiet, quiet, brushless motor. And I'd be like, I don't want that one. I want the one that sounds like an old washing machine.
You want the one that, like, your Aunt Ag would buy.
Yeah, I want to hear the propeller going around. I want the ching, 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 ching. I don't want the one with the sealed bearings and the whisper quiet motor. It's defeating its own purpose. I like the vortex sound. I like the sound of the blade. It covers up the sound I'm going to be making.
Do you think if there was a fartfan.com, which I'm sure there is,
mm-hmm.
would that be somebody who is a fan of farts or somebody who is selling the fart fan?
Interesting. There's only
you have to Google that.
Go to GoDaddy. Let's go ahead and register that domain.
Fartfan.com.
How'd you make your billions, Corolla? Interesting story. You've heard of fartfan.com? Sure. That's me.
Well, you know.
By the way, the greatest, you know, there's you've arrived things like in life. Like when you're wearing a $5,000 Armani suit and you pull a jersey over it. That's what doesn't matter if you bought a team or you want number one in the draft. Like pulling the jersey over a suit always means you've arrived. Saying, that's me, arrived. Yeah. Like when you go to people like, you ever heard of goldenpalace.com? Oh, yeah, sure. That's me. That always means you're the richest guy in the room.
Yeah, the richer you act, the poorer you dress for some reason.
Yeah, you're
heard
wearing
richer versions of poor clothes.
That thing where people go, what do? And you go, have you heard of Google? And they go, yeah, that's me. If you go, that's me, that means you're the rich guy.
I have a great story. We got to come back to this, but I have a great story about that. So I'm at the All-Star Saturday in Phoenix last weekend. Sitting next to this guy who's really nice, who's one of those, hey, I'm Bill, how you doing? And I'm with my friend Connor, and, you know, I'm watching the game. I'm watching the contest, and I don't really want to totally talk to this guy. He's very nice guy. He's with his son, whatever. I go to the bathroom at one point, come back. Connor's talking to him. Connor works for ESPN. And as they're leaving, the guy's like, yeah, I'll give you my card. And Connor's like, yeah, I'll give you your. We walk away. I'm like, wow, what are you exchanging cards with that guy for? And Connor goes, do you know who that guy was? Now, keep in mind, I only drink one thing at this point. I drink Patron.
Right.
I go out. I drink Patron on the rocks with lime. That's what I drink. I don't get hungover after.
Really?
I stick to it. I've learned not to drink stuff with juices and sodas. Mm-hmm. I'll have like two or three Patron and I'm good. Connor goes, yeah, that guy on Patron.
Wow.
Now Connor's been out with me and knows that I drink Patron. Never at any point does he give me the bump.
Wow.
And say, but anyway, so I was like, how'd that come up?
Connor sounds like an a-hole.
All right, well, he also doesn't think I should have my friends on my podcast.
But I wish Terminator would have gotten that Connor instead of the poor chick who had nothing to do with the end of the world.
Well, here's the thing. So I said to him, how did that come up, that this guy owned Patron? Mm-hmm. And Connor said, well, he asked me what I did, and I said, I work for ESPN, and then I had to give him the, well, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And he gave Connor the, ever heard of Patron? And gave himself
that's
the point.
That's me.
That's me. Yeah.
That's how you know you've arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't blame him. If I owned Patron, I would have done the same thing.
But here's the problem. It speaks to a bigger problem, and you touched on it briefly earlier, which is rich guys not dressing rich anymore.
Right.
There was a time in this country when if you were one of the Vanderbilts or, one of the Fords, you would dress accordingly. Spats, top hat. You essentially look like the Monopoly man. Mm-hmm. You'd have an ascot. You'd say things like good day. You'd be easily offended and all that kind of good stuff. Now, every single rich guy goes to Old Navy. So they're just wearing the cargo shorts and the blue tee, and you have in the flip flops. You have no idea who the rich guys are anymore.
Or the black flimsy cashmere sweater with a bad pair of black slacks.
All rich guys, they dress it down now. Yeah. I don't know why they decided to do this, but they decided to do it, and we thus don't know who the rich guys are. And I was at Kimmel's house 2 Super Bowls ago, and there was Steve Wozniak.
The Apple guy?
The Apple guy. And he's introduced to me as Steve, but he's wearing cargo shorts and flip flops, and he wants to do like magic tricks for me. And I'm like, hey, listen, a weirdo guy, out of the way. I'm trying to watch a game here. And he's like, hey, let me show you now. Okay. Now
it's like Muhammad Ali.
If I had a nickel. Yeah. And I'm like, listen. Out of the way. I'm watching the game. He evidently knew who I was. He was introduced to me as Steve. He was not rich guy Steve, not Apple guy Steve, just Steve. And he looked like a disheveled, crazy guy who wanted to do magic tricks. I want nothing to do with him. So I basically told him to beat it. I'm just saying the people who are introducing the rich people, if the rich guys are going to be wearing cargo shorts, need to have some sort of signal or some sort of sign or some sort of something so we don't tell these guys who could potentially bankroll us for something later on to F off.
Well, I have a couple ideas. Because in sports, the way it works is the guy might have a championship ring on. Mm. You notice the ring, like, hey, but I own the Sacramento Kings.
Sure.
The other idea is, and I don't know when we got away from this, what the exact date was when everybody said, screw it. Because it had to have been somewhere in the 60s. But once upon a time, you could tell who was rich by how they dressed.
That's what I'm saying.
You wore the nice suit with the top hat.
Spats.
Everybody had suits, but the really rich guys had like the really nice, you could just kind of tell.
And I got to say, all the knockoff stuff from Taiwan, like the fake Rolexes and that kind of stuff, have only served to confuse us more. Used to be you'd see a guy wearing $10,000 worth of Rolex Mariner timepiece on his left hand, and you knew at least he was doing all right.
Yep.
Now he could have picked it up in Brooklyn for $18, and it could be a knockoff. We don't know. Yeah, monocle would be nice. Crazy facial hair would be nice. Perhaps a little wax on the mustache. Something, just a little heads up. Anything but the Old Navy.
Well, you've always had that riff about politicians, too, how you want the president to look like he was a 1780s locksmith.
Yes.
The big handlebar mustache.
Yes.
The big pot belly, and he's like 6'5".
Nothing better than a huge belly in a vest.
Yeah.
When a guy wears a 3-piece suit and he's got a massive belly.
Right.
But it's not really even the belly. It actually goes into the chest.
It's like just one of those Robert Loggia bellies where he's not
right.
fat. It's
yeah.
just part of his body.
Yeah, you tell him he's fat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of thing where he says good day and he crushes guys' hands when he shakes it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well,
yeah.
I've always been convinced that's how Michael Eisner stayed in charge of Disney for so long because he was like 6'5".
Is he that rangy?
Oh, yeah. And every time they had a meeting, he probably towered over everybody and they were like, hey, don't mess with Eisner.
It's weird and true. You don't want to say no to scary guys.
Right.
You just don't. Even if it's completely political, you still, the idea of sending, send a guy like WWF's Mankind. Cactus Jack.
Well, I've had the chance, and I'm sure you have too. I've had a chance to meet at least some people who are in positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of in two types of groups. Either they're imposing in some way physically,
mm-hmm.
or they have some sort of charisma gimmick type thing.
Yeah.
That pushes them over the edge and you can't even really define it. Like for David Stern, you know, he's like 5'8". He's like Tom Cruise's height, but there's a magnetism about him.
I'll tell you what it is. You go back and look at one of your junior high or high school yearbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's been 20, 25 years since we all graduated. But you go back and look at it, and you find the real popular chick, or more importantly, to make your point, the real popular guy. There was always the couple of guys. Right. For me, it was Todd Euler. Everyone loved Todd Euler. And he had girlfriends left and right, yeah. Got laid left and right. And then you go back and look at it through the eyes of an adult, and there's just some spindly 15-year-old kid. And you think to yourself, wait a minute. Why the hell wasn't I getting any?
Right.
Why Todd Euler get it all?
Yep.
And you realize there was nothing special about Todd Euler. He wasn't the captain of the football team or anything. He just had it. And once he had it and all the girls found out he had it somehow, that was it. And that was good enough. And even a lot of the chicks that you thought were hot because they were so popular, you go back and look at them and you go, wait a minute, they weren't even that hot. It's just they had it.
Yeah.
They'd worked it out, and they'd convinced you that you needed to be with them.
I think part of that came with the guys. There's always a big sister for the guy lurking somewhere. Almost like a life coach. The big sister who was like, don't wear that. Don't call her yet.
I'll tell you what, all the chickens came home to roost with this theory, or at least an offshoot of this theory, which is, I've always had this theory that men are attracted to attractive women, and women are attracted to men who other attractive women are attracted to. So if you can convince a couple of hot chicks to go out with you early in your career, then you'll just be the guy who lays down with hot chicks, and that's how it works. And this was confirmed. This was confirmed.
By the movie Can't Buy Me Love?
I'll tell you. Well, it was galvanized by that movie, but the second confirmation came when I spoke to David Spade. David Spade is 5 foot nothing.
With a weird haircut.
With a weird, strawy-looking haircut. Nice guy and everything. He is as impressive as an end table in real life. Like, really, you've seen end tables at IKEA at your in-law's houses that you'd looked at and went, wow.
Right.
More than it's 5'3" of limp handshake with straw hair and a bad mustache. He's a nice guy. He's actually one of these guys who's now actually a little bit chubby and thin at the same time, which is not easily pulled off. He's a friend of mine. He's a nice guy. But when you meet him in real life, he is 5 foot of nothing.
You're dumbfounded.
Right. You're like, how does this guy nail every hot blonde in Hollywood? And he does. And makes no bones about it. And so I was talking when I used to have a radio show about a week ago. I was talking to Amber, the super hot model from the Sober House. I think it's Amber. Whatever. The hot model chick who was on Sports Illustrated and Vogue and all that, the super hot junkie you want to save from Dr. Drew's house.
Yep.
She is piping hot. And I was saying to her, hey, you single? How's the sobriety going? And she's like, yeah, I'm totally single. And I said, it was just joking, doing a little radio talk. I said, well, David Spade's coming up in the next hour. You know, maybe I could set you two up. And she paused and she said, David Spade, he dates a lot of hot chicks. Now, she didn't say he's hot.
Right.
She didn't say, oh, he's handsome. She said he dates hot chicks. Thus, good enough for Heather Locklear, good enough for me. That's validation for me being hot. So if he only dates hot chicks and he dates me, thus, I must be hot.
So you're calling
That's how dumb women are.
So you're calling this the Ronald Miller Domino's theory.
Jesus Christ. It sickens me, but this is how it works. Yes, if you want validation and verification of your hotness, ladies, then let David Spade bang you. That's essentially what our society's turned into.
The other dynamic, which is kind of a cousin of this, is if you've hooked up with somebody and then, like, a year later or whatever, one of her friends is making it clear she's ready to go a couple rounds.
Right.
And you don't know it's because of the of your theory that all women secretly all hate each other.
Yes.
Or maybe you got a good review from the other one.
Ah.
Or maybe a combo of both.
Mm-hmm.
But I always liked your theory about if there's five female friends and four of them show up for lunch, what are they going to talk about? The fifth one that was there.
That's how it
they
works.
Just kill her for an hour.
That's
and then
all
the next
is.
Lunch, one of the other girls is there, the other four are there, and they just murder her for the next hour.
That's what they talk about.
They're natural enemies.
Well, it's funny in a weird way, and this is going to sound grotesque, but they're all just competing for semen.
Okay.
It's like the semen Olympics.
Hit it, Joe.
No, that's not offensive. That's Darwinism.
That's true.
That's how it works. We all got put on the planet and they all want someone's seed.
Yeah.
And when one of them is missing, they all beat the crap out of them. They're all potential. They're all looked at as competition. Nothing but competition.
The semen Olympics.
Oh boy.
Well,
wow, yeah, that would be one of the most provocative pieces of programming ever.
I'm buying two URLs after we're done.
Mm.
Fartfan.com and
yeah.
SemenOlympics.com. we got to go back to Peter for a second. I really think that could be a fake movie for you.
Mm.
And we haven't come up with a fake movie in a while. So
yeah.
I want you to hash that out in your head about somewhere where urine analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that the same word, urinalysis?
I don't know. I've
your
never
analysis.
Written anything
no,
in my life.
No, it would
life.
Be called urinalysis.
Urinalysis, yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm really stupid.
I think...
You're a urinalysis expert who's called in because they had microphones in a bathroom during a murder.
Yeah.
And you're their last hope.
The listener.
Yeah. You listen to the stream.
Yes.
You break it down to... I think he was born between August and November 1970.
He's definitely left-handed.
Then they go through their database and you solve the crime.
I'm like, vegan, blue-eyed. The vegan urine has a different sound to it. It's a higher acidic level, a higher pH level than the non-vegan urine. Yeah, I came up.
Sounds like he's taking some sal palmetto.
Yeah, I hear supplements.
Go to every drugstore in the area and check the sal palmetto.
I hear some ginkgo biloba in there and some vitamin B. Faint trace of a sports drink.
Well,
vitamin water. No, Gatorade. Gatorade, wild berry.
Well, yeah. I'm going to break your heart right now and the heart of a lot of listeners. I get emailed all the time asking what happened to the pedophile podcast.
Oh, really?
Now, when we did the BS report, we started in, I think, May of 2007. Is that right, Joe? Joe? Wake up, Joe.
Joe fell
I'm here. I'm
40
here.
Minutes ago.
Joe is emailing the editors. Alert, alert.
We you can only talk about urinating for so long before Joe's got to stand up and take a whiz.
Joe, what was it, May 2007?
For the pedophile?
Yeah.
I believe
so
it
Adam,
was.
Adam was the second guest ever on the BS report, and I still had no idea how to host it. Not that I do now, but I was bad back then. And you basically carried it for 70 minutes. The last 30 of which was your movie pitch for pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's amazing to me that this could happen in 2009. Mm-hmm. But remember like when they lost like the first 10 years of Carson episodes?
Yeah. Or they would
they were like,
tape over the first Super Bowl and that kind
they're
of
like,
stuff.
They're like, oh, yeah, we had a warehouse and they burned down.
Right.
And well, didn't you have copies? No. Sorry, we lost 10 years of...
You're saying pedophile is lost?
I'm saying that... For whatever reason, like the first year of my podcast is gone.
Mm.
Somehow in this company that, I mean, if you've ever been to Bristol, Connecticut, it's like the campus is like 5 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
They have people who I think whose specific jobs are, you know, just save this podcast. I mean, that's
right.
How many people work for ESPN. Somehow these podcasts are gone. Pedophile, your pitch for pedophile is just history.
Wow. It's heartbreaking.
It's kind of sad. So now I don't know if. Do we just do it again? Do we do a second take?
I don't think people can get enough pedophile.
I don't think so either.
Are you ready?
Can you wing it?
I'll try to summon up some pedophile.
But before we do that, I think we say that for the end.
Okay.
Here's my concern for you now that you don't have your show. And I know you're going to do fine. You're working on scripts. You're up to stuff.
Sure.
Building a two-car garage in your house.
Super garage.
That has a hydraulic lift where you can lift one of your cars.
Yes, it does, Bill.
Meanwhile, your kids are in a playroom that's like 8 feet by 10.
Yeah.
That's got a two-story glass window garage with eight cars in it.
I don't want them to get too big, so I use my goldfish bowl. Plan.
Your kids are going to grow up like, yeah, I resent my dad. We didn't have a lot of money. But I've been to your house. It's gigantic. Yeah, he just didn't spend the money on us.
All the Crystal Cathedral for cars.
So now you're doing this podcast, which is obviously going to do well.
Sure, AdamCarolla.com.
There's really no reason for you to leave the house at this point.
Uh-oh.
That's my concern. Because I've seen you. You've worn the same pair of jogging pants, for 6, 7, 8 straight days. And that's when you had to see people.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to see people. This is really your dream scenario, except for the part that there's other people still living in your house.
Yeah.
Ideally, you'd just be like Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, where you'd have this giant mansion.
I could have a Christie Alley-like weight gain situation on my hands.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I was just worried that you'd not just... You'd be like Tom Hanks in Castaway. Just not have contact with other people.
No, my plan actually, I wasn't going to talk about this, but seeing as how I'm out of a gig.
You don't have to.
And no, I'm going to talk about it openly.
Okay.
I'm out of a gig, and I get paid through the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
But if I go back and take another radio gig, then I don't get paid. So I don't want to go back and take another radio gig because I want to get paid throughout the end of the year.
Now,
I'm going the Kirstie Alley route. I'm going the Valerie Bertinelli route. I'm going to pack on as many pounds as I can pack on in the next, let's say, 4 months. I'm going to see if I can get to 3 bills. I get to 300. Then James Baby Doll Dixon cuts a deal with Weight Watchers.
Oh,
and then I write a tell-all book on how I lost the weight.
And maybe even get into that Us Weekly spread of, like, who's gained weight, the shot of Jessica Simpson wearing, like, those overalls, and then you
and then at the end, we do that thing where I'm holding up my old pants. I hold them to the side.
Shrewd.
Yeah.
Shrewd.
Like the world's worst bullfighter.
Shrewd. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's diabolical.
Yeah.
It's a proven moneymaker. I'm staying out there. Everyone loves a winner. Everyone loves a comeback story. I'm on Oprah in 6 months. I balloon up. There's no reason to leave the house anyway.
And plus you get a couple months of, like, your friends going, oh, man, have you seen Adam?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's happening? He hasn't shaved in 4 months.
And
he looks like Jim Morrison.
I treat it like a role, though. I'm like De Niro for Raging Bull.
You're acting.
I'm Jeff What's-His-Name for The Big Lebowski.
It's a really interesting idea. I really like it.
And I feel like I could get to 300, no problem.
You know what, though? I think if you gain the weight, though, you got to grow your hair out.
Yeah.
Your hair can kind of get fro-y anyway, but you want to get like the Hurley hairdo to really push it over the top.
I could go Bake McBride circa 1977.
Oscar Gamble.
I could go Oscar Gamble circa 1977 in about 8 months. So right about the time I'm peaking weight-wise, I do it with the hair. Plus, who knows? If I get morbidly obese, I could probably collect disability along the way.
Well, having known you now for 6, 7 years, I don't even know how long, you were always envious of other people who got paid not to work.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually made you angry.
Yeah.
I remember when Opie and Anthony went away,
oh,
and you and Kimmel would fight about it, and Kimmel said this was terrible and
devastated.
Like, look, this is the greatest thing that could ever happen to anybody.
Well, seriously, everyone, just listen. And all you guys out there pushing a pencil or pushing a shovel or driving a hack or whatever it is you do to make ends meet, dig this concept. When you're in radio and you're in big time radio or you're in big time whatever, and you're making, we hear it all the time, especially as it pertains to sports. Oh, the guy makes $2 million or $3 million or $4 million a year. And you just sort of go, okay, $3 million a year. What you don't realize is $3 million a year, that's like $65K a week. Think about $65K.
Now, even divide that into, let's say, 40 hours a week. into 65. You're making
$12.50 an hour. You're making, let's just say for the sake of argument, you're doing pretty good in radio and you're making $200,000 a month.
Right.
All right. Now, you get S-canned from your gig. Mm-hmm. And you have 18 months, 21 months left on your gig. Could you, normal working people listening to me right now, picture going to your mailbox once a month, getting a check for $200,000 and telling somebody, yeah, only 19 more of these months before you have to leave the house again and look for a job. Cry me a river, baby. I've been waiting for that my entire GD life. And I don't have quite that deal, but I'm still looking forward to what I got.
You've had jobs. I remember, I think we went to that, whatever that place is called, the Beverly Hills, the Wolfgang Puck, what was it called? Cut?
Yeah, Cut.
And it had just opened, and it was a whole bunch of us. We're going out. We try to go out to dinner every once in a while.
Sure.
Just so we could see each other. And you just casually mentioned, I remember in like 95, I laid the carpet down in here.
Clean the carpet.
Clean the carpet. That's
worse. Worse than that.
Yeah, I remember I cleaned the carpet in
here. Oh, well, listen.
We're all like, really?
When I would be working construction, every once in a while, you'd hear a story and you'd be like, where's Dave? And someone would go, oh, you didn't hear? Dave fell off an A-frame ladder and he impaled himself on some rebar and he's going to be out with full pay for 4 months. And I'd be like, that son of a bitch. Damn, it's struck gold.
Yeah.
Struck gold. 4 months of staying home getting paid just because he had some rebar go between your ribs.
You're climbing a ladder and just thinking about falling back.
Literally thinking of throwing, closing my eyes and taking the nasty plunge onto some drywall.
And now you're Dave.
Now I'm Dave.
With a lot bigger severance.
Minus the rebar.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you. I'm strangely happy for you.
Thank you.
Because I know you're going to be up to stuff, too. Also, you know, you and I have talked about podcasting and where it's going, and I think we have a similar mindset.
Sure.
You know, the BS Report's done surprisingly well, but I'm on a mothership. I'm attached to ESPN. I'm going to be interested to see how it works with you because you're not attached to anybody. People have to come to AdamCarolla.com.
Right.
And they have to listen to it. If that works and you can monetize that, you'll be the Jackie Robinson of podcasting, basically.
Yeah. Well,
I'm kind of like Larry Doby.
I like to think of myself as the Jackie Robinson of podcasting.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I was thinking a little more Harriet Tubman of podcasting, but either way, the Jackie thing works. Yeah, it'll be interesting to find out how it goes. And, you know, I'm not doing it for the money, at least not for the first year. I mean, I'm getting paid anyway, so what do I care? I just like the sound of my own nasally drone, so I'll do it, and we'll see where it goes.
And maybe we could get a weekly one together somewhere and get Farfan.com to sponsor it.
That would be awesome.
That'd be
this hour. This hour of the Simmons and Carolla podcast brought to you by Farfan. Farfan.com. Farfan. It's just good. You know, you do one of those things where you tack something on the end.
It is amazing that conceivably.
Farfan. Who cut the cheese? Now welcome Bill Simmons.
It is amazing that conceivably we could talk a sponsor into. We would just tape an hour and a half conversation that we'd probably have anyway.
Yeah. And it would be good.
And somebody like our friends at Subway would be like, we're in.
That'd be awesome.
Can we send you guys checks?
Fart fan. We suck. Now. Enjoy.
Oh yeah.
There's our Subway. There you go.
Yeah, they sponsor us.
Yeah.
Maybe after the Subway jingle, this isn't a good time to do pedophile.
Hey, can I say this to Subway?
Yeah.
I feel like I need a resting point between the 6-inch and the 1 foot.
Interesting. I've been thinking about this.
I feel like a 9-incher is where the future is. Because I can't tell you the number of times when 6 inches is not enough, not ready for the challenge of a foot. Had a big breakfast.
I can't wait to edit this later and make it sound like you're not talking about somebody.
I'm just saying the 9-inch sub. I'm giving that to you. I'm giving that to you, Subway. How about the 9-incher? You know what I'm saying?
It's so funny you say that because as I said, there's a Subway like 5 minutes from my house. I really do go there once a week because I can bang it out. I get to watch them make it. I never know what to. I'm always torn between the 6 and the 12. The 12, I feel like. Well, I'll only eat half of the second part.
Right.
But then you never do that. You're like, screw it. And you eat the whole thing, and then I just kind of don't feel good after.
Yeah.
But the 6 isn't quite Quite enough.
Now, and also, you're not ready to admit you're ready for the six.
I'll go one further. Why can't training wheels back
on the hoagie is no way to go.
Well, why can't we demand our inch size? Why don't they get a ruler and be like, I'm thinking about maybe an 8.5?
Well,
and then they have to rule it out with the ruler and cut it.
I think what they'd have to do is, you know, they definitely have to modify the 12-inch bun. I don't know how much about Subway you know.
So they'd have to cut.
They bake it fresh over there.
Right.
So they'd have to actually cut it off. Now, what you'd have to do is do like a three-finger rule. You know what I mean? Hold three fingers up to the end of the, on the one and put the knife right up against it. That'll get you about 9 inches. You know, you hold your three fingers and do that sort of scout salute thing. That's about 3 inches right there.
You
so
know,
give them, do the three fingers up.
I feel the same way about the Baked Lays little 99-cent bags I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite enough.
Yeah.
I wish there was a $1.49 bag.
Yeah.
That had like 20 more chips in it.
Yeah, Subway. You got the small and the large. We're looking for the medium.
And for sodas,
mm-hmm.
you can get the can,
mm-hmm.
or you get the 16-ounce, which is always too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
They never have, like, the 13-ounce bottle.
Yeah, interesting. The unlucky 13-ounce bottle.
This could be a pivotal podcast for America.
Yeah.
Executives everywhere think about this.
Well, as long as we're talking products and food, how about my fruit-in-the-middle yogurt idea that
Kimmel never gets tired of laughing at? Which one is this?
Well, listen. I like fruit at the bottom. I'm old school. You know what I mean? I like to get in there and mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, you know, half inch of jelly that's at the bottom of the Newton thing.
Right.
But I realize every time I shove the spoon in there and start mixing it up, the yogurt goes all the way up the handle of the spoon. Now you got the weird spoony.
Oh, yeah. And then it gets on your finger.
Yeah, it's no good. Fruit in the bottom, good concept, too deep. Fruit in the middle. Shot of yogurt, shot of fruit. Shot of yogurt. Fruit sandwich.
A little more complicated for them to make, though.
A little R&D is going to have to go into this. I'm not going to lie to you, Bill.
Mm.
But fruit in the middle, very satisfying to mix that up. And don't have to go grave digging with the spoon.
Hey, you know, it's a logical idea, and I wonder why nobody's ever done it.
Is there any worse feeling than when your spoon slides into the bowl of soup you're eating?
No.
It gets completely submerged.
I always thought the bowl should have a little spoon holder.
Whatever it is, no bowl should come from the bowl factory that will ingest an entire spoon.
Right.
That's a bad shape. That's a bad design. There should be some testing. You know
well,
what I mean?
What about it? Like, you know, we have to go to Starbucks, Coffee Bean, whatever the chain coffee places is. They always have the coffee store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll get the 16-ounce coffee. The
right.
Venti at Starbucks.
Right.
The coffee stirrer is 16 and a half inches.
Can't get it down there. All
get
the
it
sugars
down the bottom.
At the,
if I get it down, I'm going to burn my hand.
All the sugars resting at the bottom.
Yeah, and it's
you,
like,
you
it's almost
mess
like
it up.
It's an Olympic event. I got a guy on my left, a guy on my right. I'm trying to stir my thing without burning my hand.
Right.
But I'm trying to hit the sugar.
God forbid
they made a 20-inch stir.
You know what I don't like either? I don't like, they don't really make them anymore, but the plastic stirrers that are really short, like if you go to a New York diner, you'll get those. You know what was confusing about those? They have holes in them, and you could use them as a straw. It's sort of confusing. You'd suck your eyeballs back into your socket trying to get a smoothie
true,
out of that.
Little holes.
But there was the straw, and I remember as a kid kind of like... I think I have brain damage because I've deprived myself of oxygen for too long attempting to get a Yoo-Hoo through one of those things
right.
when I was like 11, but it's like...
Yeah, maybe it's just to torture little kids.
I think it is. Look, when you make a stir stick, it's a stick, not half a straw, people.
The other thing that bugs me, well, on the subject of things that bug me, or bug us, I was in New York City for breakfast a couple weeks ago, and there's that diner mentality where... I'll have an omelet, but I don't want the hash browns.
Right.
The waitress gives you that look like,
yeah,
you don't want the hash browns. What are you, a fruit?
Right.
You know, like,
right.
What are my other options? Well,
yeah,
you can have fruit.
Yeah.
Why aren't there tons of options? People eat healthy now. Why is hash browns, it's like this code of honor to order an omelet with hash browns.
And what's with the attitude, by the way, in the tip-based economy and world you're living in?
Exactly.
There's a few things I like. I like, one of my favorites is when you get somehow kissed into your buddy's ordering, like your buddy will go like, I'll have the, BLT, no mayo and, fries. And then she turns and looks at you and you go, yeah, I'll have the club sandwich. And she pauses and goes, no mayo. And I go, yeah, that's how we met. We were chatting online on nomeo.com, and we both realized we had a common love for no mayonnaise. So, yeah, that's what we do. That's why, you think I would hang out with a guy who didn't eat mayo if I didn't eat mayo?
Yeah.
I do like the weird kissed in one. Once in a while you get this one. Once in a while the waitress will come by and dump the iced tea in your buddy's glass and then walk away with it while yours is empty. I've seen that move before.
Well, it's almost like the FU.
Passive aggressive.
Yeah.
I was at, Kimmel's gonna get pissed if he hears me talking this way, but we went to a super upscale pizza joint.
Yeah.
And, the woman I was sitting with, we had one of these moments where like, this is one of these like highfalutin pizza joints, you know,
right.
Super gourmet pizza joints where essentially, look, you putting goat cheese on pizza and arugula on pizza is ruining pizza. It's not a step up. It's a step down. But anyway.
You're deconstructing pizza and
making
it worse.
You've taken something that is not broken and attempted to fix it with water crescent and arugula, and you've taken a huge step backwards. But anyway, we're there and somebody says meatball. The most underrated pizza, meatball, and we all agree. Who doesn't like meatballs on a pizza? Everyone says, I love meatball
it's
pizza.
It's wildly underrated.
Wildly.
But the meatball has to be good, though.
Yeah.
You have to make sure it's a place that has decent meatballs.
Meatballs, underrated. So what do? We order the appetizers. Here come the meatballs. We get appetizers. We're at an Italian joint. The best meatballs I've ever had. The woman next to me, she's chomping at the bit. And by the way, she's a chick who likes meatballs on her pizza. So I'm smitten.
You're
and
a little rest.
She's like, I love meatballs. I love meatball pizza. I love pizza. I said, it's going to be awesome. We have two rounds of appetizer meatballs.
Did you take your wedding ring off as she was talking about it? Like, hey, slide it off the finger.
It was one of those things. It was funny. It was funny. I digress very quickly. My wife, who basically just, you know, every Christmas just says, here's what I want. And I say, how much does that cost? And she essentially gets it for herself online.
Right.
That's what our gift exchange has come down to.
Nice. Romantic.
She told me, she said, I want charms. I said, what do you mean charms? She said, I want a necklace and charms. I want one for Sonny. That's my son. I want one for Natalia. That's my, they want the S. And then I want the paw for Molly. And I want the three charms. I was like, by the way, where's my charm? How come I'm not represented on your net?
Not the ace?
Not for the ace, man, but she wanted the charms. And I was like, oh, what do you need these charms for? You're going to look like a housewife from Long Island. And she's like, I want people to know I have a family. And I'll express that through this jewelry. And I thought to myself, that's funny, because like when I go to Vegas, I'll take the wedding ring off. It's the exact opposite. If you think about the mentality that guys have, oops, the ring slipped off. I made a chick who likes meatballs on a pizza. They like to advertise. We like to keep it a little more quiet. But she's talking about getting the meatballs on the pizza. And I've done that thing where I have set my setting on meatball pizza now. You ever do that?
You don't want the olives and the goat cheese.
Emotionally,
pizza.
You've decided.
Yep.
Someone will start talking about something. Pizza in general.
Yep.
You know, they'll go, hey, you know what would be good tonight? And they go, pizza. And at that point, you're locked into pizza. An hour later, someone says, you know what? Maybe we go and get Thai food. No, no, no. Pizza. It's already set on pizza. So I had dialed my setting to pizza and meatball pizza. And we'd had the appetizers. And of course the, guy comes by, the waiter, and, you know, he's one of these half F, you know, kind of, wanna be an actor types. And he does, what kind of pizza would everyone like to order now? And of course the chick to my left goes, meatball pizza. And he says, we don't have that.
What?
And I was like, I was ready to pull like what the hell movie was that? 12 Easy Pieces?
Falling down?
Whatever it is. I was about ready to go Jack Nicholson on their ass, which was, you have meatballs, right? Because I just belched one up.
Cut the meatball up.
You have pizza, do you not? How about you just put a knife in half, cut it into three pieces and toss it on the pizza? You know what I'm saying? Really?
Show me to bleep that one.
And you're getting tipped based on whether we like you or not. You recognize Kimmel from his late night show.
Right.
You know, she's sitting at the table. She's a guest of him. You just gave us a round of 25 meatballs. We know they're on the premises.
Yeah.
How about you do this one, Mr. Guy who's waiting for a good tip? We don't normally do the pizza and the meatballs.
But let me talk to our chef.
Let me go back there. You just got yourself an extra $50 from Kimmel.
See, as somebody who worked in the service industry once upon a time, I'll go one further. I would go, well, we don't normally do that, but let me check.
Right.
Then you leave for the dramatic pause.
Right.
It's almost like we're going to go to commercial.
Yeah.
And when we come back, we'll find out if we have meatball pizza. Guy comes back. Hey, guys, I got some good news.
Yeah.
Wait, we can do that for you.
Yeah.
Boom. 25% tip.
I would be that way with everything on or off the menu. I'd be like a guy going, do you have toast? Hold on.
You have coffee?
Let me check. I'd go back, take a whiz, come back. You know what? We don't normally have coffee or toast or those other things. What are they called? Napkins?
Yeah.
Oh, napkins. Yeah, but for you.
Right.
Everything would be for you. That's, yeah, you get a big tip instead of, we don't do that.
Right.
Move on.
I think, we gotta do pedophile if you're gonna do it.
Tim, right? We gotta do pedophile.
Adam Carolla for the second time. The first time, tragically lost.
Yeah.
Tragically lost. phone ringing now. Everybody excited.
Yeah.
The first time was tragically lost.
Uh-huh.
And now, for the second time.
I took my iPhone and turned it off.
Can I ask you a question?
What kind of professional I am?
My wife just bought these phones.
Yeah.
And they have like an answer machine attached to them.
What year is this?
It's 2009. And I was like, how do you buy phones that have an answer? We have a voicemail. Like, we don't need
an voicemail.
And she said, well, they didn't have any other phones.
Well, at least it's good. I should take them off your hands because my family's so dopey. I have the voicemail thing that comes, you know, with the phone service. And every Friday I can look forward to a long-winded message from my mom saying, are you there? Pick up. Pick up. Pick up. Hey, crazy woman, this is going through a hub in Atlanta. Where do you think I am right now? You think I'm standing looking at a reel-to-reel recorder?
She does 1976.
Wondering whether to pick up or not on my Kodaphone? Jesus Christ.
All right, pedophile.
Let
me do a quick setup.
Yeah.
So when we worked on Kimmel's show together,
mm-hmm.
actually, you probably did this on Loveline, but this is when I first started to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
You would just come up with these elaborate fake movies that could probably never get made, but the premise was so good that we'd just sit around and go, well, why couldn't they make that? Like, we loved it that much.
Well, to be fair, my real, in earnest movie ideas never get made either. So it's
true.
Not, might as well just focus on the joke ones.
Yeah, but I always thought ABC should have given you 13 episodes. Each episode would have been a fake movie that you brought through to execution. I would have watched that show. I have no idea why they wouldn't have done that.
Well, I will say this before I do pedophile for all your fine podcasters. And speaking of the power of the podcast and the movie, whenever I come on your show and bring up my movie, The Hammer, which, by the way, was Sports Illustrated 08 Sports Comedy of the Year.
Oh.
Did you see that?
I did see it. The only thing is I didn't know who the competition was.
Competition?
Because I think you were competing against The Express, the Ernie Davis story.
Take that, dead ball player. Who died at 23.
Right.
No, it was, Adam Carolla did what George Clooney couldn't do and Matthew McConaughey couldn't do and some other big name guy. I can't remember what other, Will Ferrell couldn't do.
Oh yeah, you beat semi-pro, you beat Leatherheads.
Yes.
And you beat, it's not bad though.
Yeah, best sports comedy of the year.
Well, you know, I love it. I've watched it multiple times.
So the point is whenever I come on your show and mention The Hammer, it always hops on to Amazon's top 10 list or top 100 list. Ooh. Or whatever it is. But your show, your people, the people who hear me right now, put it on to Amazon's top 100 list.
That was nice of them.
That's nice of you, and I'll look forward to checking Amazon tomorrow and seeing it there again. Now.
But you should also mention it's also on pay-per-view.
It's also on pay-per-view.
I saw it on pay-per-view.
I didn't know it was on pay-per-view.
It's like $3.99.
Enjoy.
It's funny because, you know, it has the movie description.
Yeah.
It has the two stars, and it was like, The Hammer, blah, 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 guy, box of it, starring Adam Carolla and Osnaraldo, blah, 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 whatever his name was.
Ozzy Castillo. Well,
all right.
Now, back to pedophile.
Okay.
Okay.
Now really, give us the Give us the all-out version. Don't give us...
I'm going to burn some calories.
But yeah, burn some calories
in this one. You're going to have to assist me here because I can't remember all of pedophile. Okay. The year is 2031.
Right. So it's an Escape from New York type of setup. We're futuristic.
That's right. And by the way, it's become a global economy. It's one world. It's one village now. There's really no, we're all on the same currency. There's no borders anymore. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we're heading there now. It's 2031. We're there. Now, pedophiles. What do we do with them? Seriously, the world doesn't know what to do with these guys because we all agree that we want them out of society, but you can't really execute them because they didn't murder anybody.
Yep.
Chemical castration is weird, and it's sort of Orwellian, and it's Frankensteinian, and nobody wants to do that. But also, no one wants to let these guys out of the joint after 11 years to have them feast on our kids again. Mm-hmm. What do you do? French Guiana. Devil's Island. We put all of the pedophiles, and I don't mean from this country, the world's pedophiles. We're one nation now, essentially. All the pedophiles of the world end up on Pedophile.
And it becomes their own little community. They're on their own devices. You live there.
Yeah.
Like Escape from New York.
It's a Lord of the Flies meets a gay porn.
Right.
And it is, as usual in all these movies, it's secretive. We don't want this getting out. Well, we don't want the press and the mainstream to find out that we're dumping these guys, essentially just dumping them on islands.
So it's like when Giuliani got rid of the homeless in New York City. He put a much more elaborate version.
Put them on a garbage barge and dump them in Newark.
Right.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. We're really just dumping them on this isle. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, well, what happened to all the pen? No one asks, by the way. No one goes like, hey, man, my kid hasn't been molested in like a year. What's up?
Right.
No one's suspicious. There's just no more pedophiles. Well, they're all on Pedophile. And the thing about Pedophile is, you know, there's different sects, different cults. It really becomes like the Warriors, the baseball pedophiles, the Chicano pedophiles. There's the Aryan Brotherhood, the Crips and the Bloods. You know what I mean? The priest pedophiles.
Yeah.
Right. They're all spread out. They're all different. And they've literally broken off into pedophile tribes all on Pedophile. Now, what happens? I'll tell you. I'll tell you what happens. We cut to a dad. He's a hurry dad, household, has a young son, 9-year-old, into scouting, and has the super rebellious Shia LaBeouf type. He's the,
dad John Hamm for the dad, maybe?
John Hamm is dad. Nice looking. With a beard.
With a beard. Interesting. Okay.
Grew a beard. A little salt and pepper. He's playing a little older.
Okay.
We got him to play like about 45.
Right.
John Hamm from Mad Men plays the dad. Mm-hmm. Good call. Shia LaBeouf is playing, we're going to have him play a little younger. He's playing an 18-year-old.
Okay.
Former Eagle Scout. But that was back when he was 15 and 16. He's now turned his back on scouting. He's gone goth. He's wearing the guy liner.
Snaps to dad when dad tells him to get ready.
He's listening to Depeche Mode and all that kind of stuff. And making fun of the young 9-year-old. Played by Dakota Fanning, by the way. That's right.
Also playing young.
Skewing young with a bob hairdo. Playing a young male. Oh, yes. Or one of the Culkins we haven't heard of. Either way, Dakota Fanning, this is good. This is Boys Don't Cry kind of stuff. This could be Academy Award type stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, cross-gender stuff. She's playing the young son, okay? Now, she's enthusiastic about scouting, but the older son is laughing and making jokes. And, of course, Hammy, he don't like it.
Yeah.
He's still into scouting, and he's still a scout leader.
Now is mom dead?
Yeah, mom passed away.
So you got to acknowledge that. Like, when they're leaving, he looks at the picture of him and his wife and kind of does the adjustment, the she's dead adjustment.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The longing stare.
We have a flashback scene.
Okay.
Flashback scene of mom going for a merit badge and rappelling. John Hamm up top. Close up of the spike getting loose in the granite.
Oh, a little cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of cliffhanger. Not a little. Lot. It getting loose. Hammy saying, I put that spike in myself. It ain't going anywhere.
Yep.
She's rappelling down Half Dome. Slow motion.
Yeah.
Falling. Falling to her death.
Right.
Slow motion yelling his name. He does the slow motion no.
Do you do the camera, the bad special effect camera, over her falling, where they obviously shot it with the green screen behind her?
Yeah, yeah.
The arms are flailing?
Yeah, yeah. She's falling to her death. He has that flashback.
Right.
Older son, Shia LaBeouf, blaming dad.
Yep.
Blaming dad for death, going for the repelling merit badge.
She shouldn't have been out there. She didn't have enough experience to do
that. You should have known. Yeah, you set that rig yourself, Dad. Yeah, blame
him. Why don't you kill mom again?
Yeah. A lot of listening to Depeche Mode up in his room.
A lot of headphones.
A lot of guy liner.
Yeah.
All right, so real Columbine stuff. Point is, there's one last jamboree. There's one last jamboree in Barbados. And Dad has put his foot down. Tells the son, the older son, LaBeouf, and of course, young son, Dakota Fanning, you're going with me.
Now, do you do D Fanning in the credits
why,
so we don't know? It's
yeah,
Dakota
we don't
Fanning?
Know. We don't know the whole time.
Right.
Right. So, the young Fanning and LaBeouf are going, puts that one last jamboree in Barbados. And of course, the Eagle Scout is upset about this whole thing. He just sits there with his arms folded the entire time. He doesn't even want to participate in anything. And on the flight home, he's just listening to his iPod with more of that goth music playing in it. He wants no part of this until there's engine trouble. Goose strike.
A 2009 wrinkle. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Goose strike on the way home. Plane has to ditch. Where? In the lagoon of Pedophile.
Ugh.
Guess who doesn't make it through the crash?
John Hamm?
That's right. And the pilot. Hammy don't make it.
I don't know if Hamm's going to want to be in this if he dies in the
first
20 minutes.
He's a friend. I could get him in.
Are you sure he's not paralyzed? We could do it like the daylight, like the Stan Shawn daylight. The guy who gets he's trapped under like a piece of lumber. They can't get him out.
There's a scene, but then he dies.
Okay.
We didn't speak specifically about Pedophile when I was over at Jimmy's with Hammy.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But he shot me a look at a certain point, and I think it was about the third quarter of the championship game. He gave me a look that basically said, I want to grow a beard. I want to do a project that takes place on an island with pedophiles.
Right.
And I'd had a couple of beers, but even through the fog of my drunken beer haze, even through the fog of that microbrew haze, I got that look, and it read loud and clear.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed.
Okay.
Just one glance from Hammy. I'm pretty sure that's the look he gave me. He could have been looking past me and saying hi to someone. I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure he gave me that I'd like to collaborate on a pedophile-based project with you where I grow a beard and I'm trapped under some wreckage. So he's dying. Yeah, he's in the wreckage. And he pulls LaBeouf's character down and he says, you've got to lead this troop.
Right.
You're the only, these are a bunch of like weebelos.
You're the only
Eagle Scout. You're the senior on this tour and you're the only Eagle Scout in this plane.
Right.
You've got to lead. And that's when he dies. That's when he's gone.
Could maybe got enough screen time for a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we got him like 20 minutes, so he might be eligible at least.
There is the whole funny yet touching cooking montage that takes place in Act 1.
Right.
Where he's trying to make the favorite omelet just like Mama used to make before she died in the Half Dome rappelling incident.
Right.
And he's not naked.
Not as good.
There's eggshells in there. Yeah. Dakota Fanning's character is rolling her eyes. It's good stuff. It's touching stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he can't make a Denver omelet.
It's a little Kramer versus Kramer.
There's with a little Mrs. Doubtfire sprinkled in.
A dusting of Doubtfire.
It's Kramer v. Kramer with a dusting of Doubtfire.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's right on the poster.
So how many Boy Scouts do we have now at this point? Like 15?
Well, you figure you have the one of every nationality.
Yeah, because you got to do that now.
You basically think Bad News Bears.
Give the kid in the wheelchair?
Good call.
Because in the new Bad News Bears, they put the kid in the wheelchair because they try to hit that.
Good call.
Yeah, you want that kid.
Okay, you got the kid in the wheelchair. You got the black kid. You got the Asian kid. You have the nerdy kid. You have the tough guy.
Need the Indian kid.
Bully kid. You got the Indian kid.
Hispanic kid.
Yeah. You have one of everything.
Tomboy girl?
Well, that's Dakota. Oh, you know what you need? That's the Hispanic chick. Who is like, did you see Aliens or Alien 3?
Oh, like Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, super tough.
Rough, like a young Michelle Rodriguez.
I can do more chin-ups than you, chick.
Okay.
Yeah, that chick, yeah.
They didn't want to let her in the Boy Scouts, but she sued the state.
Right.
To get in, and now she's in.
She's more man than they'll ever be.
Right.
But by the way, much like, Will Smith and I Am Legend, immune on pedophile.
Oh, interesting.
They're only interested in the young boys.
Interesting. I didn't even think
that. She's got a free pass.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so it's they're only into dudes on pedophile.
Right.
So she walks around with impunity. So, now they're on their own. And of course, the pedophiles have all been aroused, so to speak, by the plane going down. They've all seen it. They see the fire in the distance, and they're all heading toward it. All the different tribes converging on the wreckage. They're going to pick through the carcass of whatever's left in that plane.
Right.
Now they get moving, and of course, they don't know. They don't know they're on pedophile. They just think they're on an island because the government has not acknowledged pedophile.
So there's a couple emotionally scarring early scenes where the kids, they see other people and pedophile who can help them, adults.
They don't realize yet. There's the one scene. It's a controversial scene. There's the one scene where the one kid, and he's the kid with the least personality, who we don't need to remember, sees the fire in the distance and yells, "Hey, there's help!" And he goes running toward the camp of the pedophile. And I'm yelling, "No, don't go!" And he goes, and then it's just one of these things where we hear his scream, and we cut to the canopy and see the birds fly away. Very controversial, very moving, very moving. And that's when I realized.
You love the bird, when the birds fly away, you
the
love
the canopy of the jungle. That's when I realized, I have my work cut out for me. I have to lead this troop.
You're talking about Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, LaBeouf. Right. Sorry, I put myself in LaBeouf's role. I live through LaBeouf. Now, there's another story.
I thought there was a C story here. I thought there was a Con Air type wrinkle where somebody had been wrongly imprisoned and thrown on pedophile.
There's a couple things going on. Mm-hmm. There is the ex Green Beret who was tossed on pedophile for a crime he didn't commit.
For a pedophile crime he didn't commit.
Well, yeah, allegations. Yeah.
Allegations by, like, his ex-wife who abused him and framed evidence.
Drummed out of the military.
Yeah.
Ribbons and unceremoniously ripped off the flak jacket and tossed on to pedophile. And
so he's like a cross between Snake Plissken, and Nick Cage and Con Air. He's got the long hair. He's wearing the sleeveless white T-shirt.
Yeah.
Everybody leaves him alone.
I'm thinking Nick Cage for this role.
How can we get him?
With extensions.
I'd like to at least talk to Mickey Rourke first.
He did Bangkok Dangerous. I think he will do anything.
Yeah, you're probably
right. If you think about his last five movies.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Next.
By the way, no bigger Nick Cage fan than you.
He did a movie called Next.
Yes.
He did the remake of The Wicker Man.
Yes.
Are you kidding?
He will do anything.
Besides, once Hammy comes on board, these other guys are going to fall like dominoes.
Right.
We get Hammy on board, Dakota on board. We get LaBeouf on board. And, Cage just hears these three heavyweights are in there. I'm in.
Maybe Kate Winslet?
Yeah.
Kate Winslet is the mom.
Ooh, good.
In the flashback scene.
Yeah. Another Oscar.
Yeah.
Another O for Winslet. Yeah, and by the way, do you think he read the script to Bangkok Dangerous or Next?
No.
He's fine. He's in. Hair extensions. Works out.
Yeah.
Buff. Native buff.
So... once everybody is descending on the scouts, only one man can really save them other than LaBeouf.
Right. He's the loner.
Yeah.
He's the loner who, by the way, is going to fight the pedophile and clear his name along the way. Although there's a controversial scene when he gets drunk around the campfire like they did in Red Dawn.
Yeah.
He does take a look at one of the boys for just a little too long.
But it's left ambiguous.
That's right.
Like Al Pacino in The End of Cruising.
That's right. Much like that.
He's kind of looking for an extra long second, and it's just unclear.
This is Kramer versus Kramer meets Cruising, meets Mrs. Doubtfire.
Meets Con Air.
Meets Con Air.
Meets Escape from New York.
Meets Escape from New York, meets The Island.
Meets
Cutthroat Island.
Meets Cutthroat Island, meets a pedophile movie that's never been made because nobody's ever made a pedophile movie.
Yeah. So he's on there. And, of course, there's another scene where the fat kid who can't keep up is devoured by pedophiles. And, again, we cut to the canopy with the birds flying away one more time.
Do you have, you know, when you introduce the Nick Cage character, do you have the scene where some of the other pedophiles make him some sort of obscene offer and he doesn't even respond? He just stares them down and they walk away.
Well, they don't, he would be killed faster than a stoolie in the joint if they found out on pedophile that he wasn't pedophile.
So he's got to act.
He's got to act.
As he is pretending to be with it, he is secretly just picking off the pedophiles and saving the kids. And
he sees what has happened. It's like every good movie where the FBI agent, the badass FBI agent, like Bosworth,
yep.
like the Boz,
yep.
infiltrates a biker gang. And there's that scene where they catch the other FBI agent and they're like, let's kill him. And the Boz can't give up his cover. He's got to go, you know what? He's worth more to us alive. And then he punches the guy.
Yeah.
But you still know it's his buddy, but he's doing anything he can to save him.
Or he goes, let me do it.
Let
he
me
drags
do it.
The kid away,
yeah.
but doesn't
yeah.
kill him.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
knocks him unconscious.
Yeah, does that. Does that move.
You yeah. know, quick tangent. In movies, you always see somebody will knock somebody unconscious
yeah.
as a device, like Midnight Run.
Yeah.
It happens over and over again. In real life, if you punch somebody in the face, the odds of actually knocking them out are pretty low. They're going to roll around and go, ow!
Yeah.
What the hell?
You get a little, yeah. You don't get so much Spock from Star Trek. Are you nuts?
It's not going to be like Tommy Hearns and Pepino Cuevas every time. You're
no.
not going to throw the perfect right-hand cross.
No.
You're going to knock the guy down, but he's going to stumble around.
That was Roberto Duran, by the way.
Roberto Duran and Pina Cuevas?
No, that was Hearns and Roberto Duran.
No, but remember Tommy Hearns? Oh, it was Wilfredo Benitez. That's who I meant.
They're the best.
Tommy Hearns cold-cocked Wilfredo Benitez.
The best lights-out in the ring knockout is when Tommy Hearns
punches Roberto Duran
and just drops him.
No mas.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
On the ground.
Yeah.
So how does pedophile end?
By the way, Pepino?
Somebody
Cuevas,
knocked Pepino out Pepino Cuevas.
Pepino Cuevas, you know what Pepino means?
What?
Cucumber.
Really?
Yes. Had a 20-minute Green Acres-type conversation with my nanny from Mexico about Pepino. I'm like, she called one of my kids Pepino. And I'm like, Pepino? And she's like, yeah, it's Cucumber. And I said, is that a nickname? And she said, no. But she knew who Pepino Cuevas was. And I was like, wow, I dig that you know that
that's
much
weird.
About boxing.
See, there should be a website of all the Spanish athlete names translated to English.
Yeah.
Because like Jose Mesa, the Indians closer, was Joe Table in
right.
English.
Yeah.
It would just be fascinating to see Cucumber,
Cucumber
whatever English for Cuevas is.
Is really up there with Jicama in terms of striking fear into people.
Right.
I would box a guy named Cucumber sight unseen.
Yes.
Butterbean, the only worse nickname in
yeah.
boxing than Cucumber. Pepino Cuevas, you know what I mean? Yeah, listen.
Or the Wobbler, I think, would be a
yeah, you want the Sandman, you want the Undertaker,
yeah.
you want Lights Out, James Toney, and all that.
Yeah.
You want the Cobra, the Motor City Cobra. You want all that good stuff, the Executioner, Bernard
yeah, executioner
Hopkins.
Is a good
you don't
one.
Want the Cucumber.
Right. You're not like, yeah, I'm fighting the Cucumber
Whoa.
Next week. I'm a little worried.
I'm a little worried. Going up against a super watery fruit.
So we don't want to give away the ending to pedophile, right?
Well,
because we still got to sell the movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't want to step on Act 3. They end up at the top of a mountain, and they fashioned a crude glider.
Oh.
That's what's missing from movies. There used to be movies where they'd have to build some sort of glider, and at the very end, launch it off the top of a... You know, they used to do a lot of Nazi escape movies that way, and island movies that way. Yeah, crude glider.
We forgot that. Who died? Does Dakota die or does LaBeouf die? Because one of them has to die. And it has to be a scene where they're running.
Yeah.
And like Toy Soldiers when Will Wheaton dies.
Yeah.
No! But yeah. the guy's running.
Will
he's
Wheaton
like, can't take
is
it anymore.
One of the pedophiles, by the way. It's a 42-year-old Will Wheaton.
Interesting.
He's looking for work.
You know, every pedophile could potentially be played by a child actor from the 70s or
80s. That's the hook.
Zabka.
Who's that? That's Johnny Whitaker from Family Affair. Oh! Dear God, no.
Barry Williams.
They're all the guys we grew up, all the, we get Bonaducci in
Skippy,
there.
Skippy from Family Ties.
We get both drummers from the Partridge Family.
Oh, beautiful.
We get little Ricky who came into the Partridge Family. We get cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch.
Robbie Wrist.
Yeah, he's a fat pedophile now. balding.
The glasses.
That's why we need to team up, because this idea of this stunt casting of every single, we'll have Leif Garrett be the guy who rapes the fat kid.
I got one more for you. I got one more that gets a no-no from the theater. Mm. One of the leaders of the pedophiles?
Mm.
Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, that's good.
In an ironic twist, because once upon a time, he's the LaBeouf character, the Dakota Fanning character now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
And you don't know it's him right away because he's got like a scruffy beard.
Yeah.
And dyed hair.
Yeah.
But there's a look in his eye that him, we haven't seen since The Good Son.
Him and Dr. Phil will be almost unrecognizable in this, in these roles. A controversial breakout role. He's the leader of the rough trade group. I don't want to get any more detail than that.
All right. Pedophile. Well, I'm glad. Joe Mead.
Yeah.
We have this on tape. We're not going to lose this one, right?
I sure hope we don't lose this one.
When do you think this gets through the ESPN editing system? Like about 3 weeks from now?
Could be.
Could be tough. I don't remember us pushing the line with the last pedophile.
I'm technically going out on a limb and saying there's nothing that we talked about on this movie pitch that I couldn't talk about on my former radio show, which was a nationally syndicated,
that's
FCC-regulated radio show for CBS.
That's an awesome point, and please pass that along, Joe Mead.
So please man up, ESPN.
All right, Adam Carolla. That was fun.
AdamCarolla.com is where you go to hear the ending to Pedophile.
Welcome to the Wonderful World of Podcasting. I demand to be like one of the first 20 guests. Once you're tired of hosting the show yourself. Anytime.
Well, I only spoke for 4 hours this morning, so I'm glad I was able to get an extra hour in on
you
the
You know what's
way
funny
home.
Is I felt like you were warming up in the last half hour, which would have been like basically your sixth hour of
yeah,
talk.
I start to hit my stride.
You just get going. You're like one of those pitchers who could throw 190 pitches. You're just feeling it.
If I were a marathoner, I would hit my stride about the 27th mile.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you, Billy.
Talk to you soon.
So I get the sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.